Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
All right, well, I'm going to speak for yourself. I am Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if the Lakers just proved that Anthony Davis fiasco is behind them.
And if LeBron James is fooling himself by saying he has nothing left to prove. But we start every day with a Whitlock, so what you got today?
Oh, yesterday, a story at Yahoo Sports argued that Todd Gurley's playoff disappearance is yet another reason it's a mistake to pay NFL running backs big money. The author, Frank Schwab, made an interesting observation writing, the Houston Texans wouldn't sit J.J. Watt for a half the snaps and blame game flow. The New York Giants wouldn't ignore Odell Beckham Jr. because of rhythm. There's no game plan that would leave Tom Brady on the bench for half of New England's snaps. Schwab's point is the $57.5 million contract extension the Rams gave Gurley last offseason was a gigantic waste. I completely disagree. Rams coach Sean McVay's Super Bowl game plan was garbage. And if the Rams owners, Stan Kroenke, and general manager Les Snead, if I were them, I'm having a long conversation with the golden boy of coaching about why my $57 million running back wasn't used like a $57 million running back. Paying Gurley was an organizational decision. Ownership, executives, and coaches all should have agreed to pay Gurley last offseason. The organization decided to make Gurley a focal point of the offense. McVay detoured from that plan during the postseason, and quarterback Jared Goff paid the price for that decision in the Super Bowl. For his career, Gurley has averaged 10 yards per reception. Guess how many yards per reception Patriots wideout Julian Edelman has averaged for his career?
How many?
10.8. The Patriots figured out a way to make Edelman MVP of the Super Bowl. McVay, the smartest offensive mind in the history of football, threw the ball more often to human bowling ball C.J. Anderson than Gurley. Gurley was the life preserver that Goff needed early in the Super Bowl. It was obvious in the Rams' first possession that Goff was rattled. It made sense. A 24-year-old kid facing Tom Brady in the Super Bowl is supposed to be nervous. The perfect way to settle Goff down would have been some easy throws to Gurley swinging out of the backfield. It would have slowed the Patriots' rush and given Goff confidence. You're not going to convince me that the value of running backs is declining when I just watched Carolina Panthers running back Christian McCaffrey carry Cam Newton for an entire season. The first 5 or 6 weeks of the season, McCaffrey had Newton playing at an MVP level. After Newton re-injured his shoulder, McCaffrey's playmaking ability masked the fact Newton couldn't throw downfield. Why are we dumping on the running back position because Sean McVay choked in a big game? All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst Greg Jennings and making his Speak for Yourself debut former Pro Bowl quarterback, Notre Dame great, Steve Berline. Marcellus?
Yes, sir, sir, sir.
Start with you.
Yes, sir, 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 sir.
You surely agree with me. Running backs are no less valuable than they have been at any time in the history of football. They're still very valuable. Todd Gurley's absence from the Super Bowl proves nothing.
How did you wake up from that boring Super Bowl with this revelation? This is completely off. I don't agree with you. The running back position has been devalued for many a years. If you look at the running back position, one, it's a position through all my experience, and I'm a former running back all the way to the pro level, even in college. Damn right, I was a running back. Tilting, too. Should have got some snaps in the league. I'll let that go. It's a position where if you look at the position, you can find normal guys that could give you exceptional production. And it's weird because it may not last, it may not be forever, but there have been times where I've looked at our running back core and I'm like, we don't have a lot of high draft choices there, but we still are doing a great job in terms of running the football. I give you some numbers that proves what I'm saying. Only three teams have won the Super Bowl with a Pro Bowl running back on the roster since 2000. Think about that. This Tom Brady era, all this.
Terrell Davis carried John Elway.
We can go back.
That's where you had to go, but go ahead.
You want to go farther? Why are you going that hole?
Well, I'm just.
You know why? Because of the top 10 running backs all time, more than half, six of them, have never won a Super Bowl. Oh, the best running backs don't even guarantee a championship.
What? How many did Emmitt Smith win?
Okay, you can pick out the outliers.
Most yards. I'm just saying.
I love your outlier argument, but I'm just giving you the meat of the argument, okay? The meat of the argument is the running back position has been devalued for good reason. It's because if you look at it, what's easier to get? 4 yards going through nine defenders or just throwing the short passes like New England, and that's why they continue to win without necessarily having the great ground.
Sean McVay found it illegal to throw to Todd Gurley doesn't mean other coaches agree with that.
Even the greats like Walter Payton in a Super Bowl. Remember that game? Did he score?
Don't do that.
I'm just saying that you keep giving me outliers.
Walter Payton.
First of all, I'm talking about the game. I ain't talking about the name. I ain't talking about the man. He's amazing. But I'm saying there are moments where you can see the running back position is devalued for good reason. And I just gave you enough examples. Greg?
Thank you, Greg. I'm not with you this time.
Oh, here we go.
I'm not with you this time. All right, and it's because the running backs, they do so much more in this current way of football, this wave of football. They're not just simply hand me the ball and I run through these nine guys that you're talking about.
All right.
Todd Gurley, what he provides to that offense is more than just running the ball. It's a safety valve. And to, you made one of the best points in this argument, Jason. You said, and it hurts. McVay detoured from the game plan during the postseason and quarterback Jared Goff paid the price.
Yeah.
He did. Because his number one safety valve, his vote of confidence relies with turning around and seeing Todd Gurley is behind me and understanding if I drop back and I don't have anything in front of me, I know Todd Gurley is either to my left or to my right for an easy check down. It's a quarterback's.
That was Cooper Kupp. That was Cooper Kupp's job and then C.J. Anderson's job. No.
It was. Huh? That's always been the running back's job. We look at it with Alvin Kamara. We look at it with Saquon Barkley. We look at it with Christian McCaffrey, who you mentioned, Ezekiel Elliott. You're telling me that you're only putting running backs in a pigeonholed space of running the football. They're greater assets to teams now because they can catch out of the backfield. And so Todd Gurley is one of the reasons why they value the running back position the way they do now.
Jason, I disagree with Marcellus. I agree with you, and I agree with you, Greg.
All right.
100%,
the
running back position is absolutely vital. Now, I'm coming from a quarterback perspective.
Give it to us.
And I love to throw the ball. I mean, I love throwing the football. Wide receivers are my best friend. But truly, if you get down to it, on the offensive side of the ball, it all starts with running. You're a defensive player.
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
Mm-hmm.
What is your first job as a defense? What are you going to shut down first?
Alignment.
You're going to shut down.
I'm still going through Pavlov dog. Alignment.
You're going to shut down a running back. You're going to shut down a running game.
If they got a running game.
You're going to shut down that running game first and foremost.
Yes.
Now, if you've got a dual threat running back, we go down the list. You mentioned a few. Greg Zeke. You mentioned Christian McCaffrey. We can talk about
all those champions.
Mark Ingram.
Keep going.
Alvin Kamara.
All them champs.
Listen, they don't all have Tom Brady on their team.
I get it.
They don't all have Tom Brady.
And even when Tom Brady's not in the Super Bowl, I'm just talking about it. Why do you think there was an era where we started to talk about, and it's been in recent times, the running back position is the value. The question is, are running backs less valuable now? Absolutely, because you can win. You just said it. Tom Brady. Tom Brady makes household names out of no-name receivers.
No doubt about it. But Sony Michel ran the football.
He did all three playoff games.
He was at 100 yards or just below 94 in the Super Bowl. Other two playoff games, he was well over 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And that opens up everything else. And that's my point. The running back is the quarterback's best friend. If they ran the ball 18 times in the Super Bowl. Todd Gurley only ran the ball 10 times.
Yeah.
Jared Goff looked like what? He looked like crap in that. He wasn't ready to play. But they
would have been 3-3 game.
Yes, it was a one-score game the whole way.
A one
until the very
game,
end. Yeah. One possession game until the very end. If they feed the ball to Todd Gurley early, and if they get C.J. Anderson in the mix, it opens up everything for Jared Goff. I think it was.
I agree schematically. I'm just talking about the results. The results have shown that the running backs are not getting the job done in terms of helping you ultimately hoist the Lombardi Trophy. It's been the quarterback and receiver position more so.
I disagree with you about the receiver aspect because we've overvalued these diva receivers.
Wait a minute.
We've overvalued them.
Let's stay focused now.
And we keep diminishing the running back position. And to me, this guy's article, and look, I thought he made some fine points.
He did.
And I think people are over – there's a reluctance to me to just say, Sean McVay, man, you blew it. Early in that – the first possession in that game for the Rams, I tweeted out, hey, man, Jared Goff is rattled. He's a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
If I can see it at home, you got to get this man some easy completions. They were asking to throw downfield. They were getting a pass rush. Just flick it out to Gurley. Let him move the chains for you. It's the same thing the Patriots do for Brady with Edelman.
Well, you know what? What happened is disguised coverage is what really rattled Jared Goff. So, you know, Jared Goff gets a lot of his communication from Sean McVay. They go up into the 15-second, right?
Sure.
What they were doing, New England was just like, we're going to wait to 9 seconds and then disguise our coverage that's there. So he didn't have his communication, so he was already out of comfort.
Great Steve, you would know better than I. But it's easier to me to get the ball to the running back out of the backfield. I don't think they can scheme that away from you.
Well, they can scheme. They can try to take different things away from him. But Sean McVay, what makes him so effective is that creativity of which we saw none in the Super Bowl. I picked Todd Gurley to win the MVP of that game. I thought that the Rams were going to come out and find all those different ways, what you were talking about, to get him the football because they had not used him in previous weeks.
Someone needs to be writing an article that the Super Bowl proves that these 33-year-old millennial overhyped coaches are overrated. That's what the article should have
been. He's not overrated. He got schooled.
He did.
He got schooled.
All right, Marcellus, I want to ask you this. Why do – because I think you have a theory on this. Why do you think Gurley was marginalized in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I do have a theory, and I'm going to save my theory for last. But I'm going to start with what's out there. The first theory was, hey – maybe he was getting benched by C.J. Anderson. C.J. Anderson came on strong after they got him off of the waiver wire, and he just outplayed Todd Gurley. That didn't land with me, especially when you just got paid $57 million, knowing the NFL and the business aspect. That didn't land with me. The second one was maybe he was hurt, and everyone kept it a secret. You know, when you're injured and you keep it a secret, the NFL doesn't like that, and there are consequences for teams that have done that, and people have been penalized for keeping the injury too close to the vest so that you don't tip your hand to your opponents. But then I came up with my own theory, and I must say that this was given to me by a couple of individuals that I would keep anonymous. I am truly a journalist now. I got sources. Somebody told me, they said, you know what? Just look back at when things changed for Todd Gurley. And we all know that Todd Gurley was having an amazing MVP caliber season. And then mysteriously he was benched or taken out of the lineup for injury, right? And at the same time, coincidentally, he went on the shop with LeBron James. And if you remember Todd Gurley's part of the shop, LeBron was talking about the old white men who have NFL players and they have a slave mentality. Todd Gurley didn't say anything about that. Todd Gurley didn't chime in on that. But as you can see, as Martin Luther King once said, silence is betrayal. He did not. He didn't say anything. And I wonder, that took me to a place like, wow, that would be crazy if this is really a directive, like coming from up top. We've never seen that happen before. Yes, we have. I've been a part of a couple of them. One of them, Rob Johnson and Doug Flutie, where Doug Flutie won 9 games for us, got it to the playoffs, and all of a sudden the owner said, sit him down. I want Rob Johnson to start a playoff game. From nowhere. Only won 1 game that entire year, put him out there. Malcolm Butler, you missed the team meeting. Whoa. Sit him down in the Super Bowl. That's crazy. We could look at situations even upstairs fighting in beef. A.J. Smith and Marty Schottenheimer. No real reason to beef. You won 14 games. I want to fire you. Why? just didn't like how you worked. And I've seen these situations happen time and time again. Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, y'all remember? Oh, the face of the franchise should be Marshawn Lynch. No, Russell Wilson in these fine moments. So all I'm saying is there may be something that goes with a guy coming out in a public forum after getting $57 million from one man and then let someone else condemn him and not necessarily having his back.
What you're saying is interesting because Kroenke, you're right. Just a lot of upfront money, paid a running back when the whole everybody's saying don't pay running backs, and then the guy sits on TV and doesn't defend the man that just gave him that kind of money. I'm not sure if I'm ready to go all the way there, but here's what I will say. I was in Kansas City during the Marty Schottenheimer era, and they had a running back, Greg Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg Hill averaged like 5.5 yards a carry every time he touched the ball one season. And he would go out there and break off a 26-yard run, and then you'd never see him again. And all year we kept trying to figure out, man, they spent a first-round draft pick on Greg Hill. And every time he's out there, he's productive, but they won't play him. And it came out later, it was gossiped about and rumored about for a long time, that there was a major personal problem between Marty Schottenheimer and Greg Hill. Hmm. Not going to go into what the personal problem was, but it's what separates a lot of men from each other.
So I get it.
It can happen.
Well,
can
I will tell you this. I'm not going to go so far as to say that that was why the decision was made and why Todd Gurley was minimized. But now, you remember back in the day, I played with the L.A. Raiders, and there was running back by the name of Marcus Allen. Marcus Allen.
Yes.
Why do you think Marcus Allen didn't play very much?
Yeah, that was
Al personal. Davis, the owner of the Raiders, mandated that Marcus Allen is not going to play. He's not going to be bigger than this organization. Mm. And now you can take it anywhere you want to take it. I was there. I know Mark because I was happening to get buried at the same time by Al Davis. So the bottom line, though, is that Marcus Allen never was allowed to reach his potential as a Raider football player. And the defenses knew who the best running back in the NFL was at that time. It was Marcus Allen. Yeah. But he was only used in third down situations. Now, this particular situation with Todd Gurley, I can't believe that the Rams would jeopardize or sacrifice their Super Bowl and put that on the line based on what you're talking about.
Look, it's a theory that came from a couple of people, and I said, interesting, but I need to put it out there just because we just saw last year in the Super Bowl a cornerback who had played 97% of all snaps all of a sudden just find himself in the doghouse in the right. biggest moments in a game where you were getting lit up in pass
exactly
defense.
Right. And a cornerback that hadn't been paid yet.
Yeah.
We're talking about Todd Gurley, who we've already invested in you.
Right.
We've already given you.
And which one will cut you deeper?
I
gave you money and that's how it's going down?
I get that. Mm-hmm. I get that. But when we paid this guy, we found him to be everything that we're looking for running backs in our league to be. He's not outgoing. He doesn't say things that we don't need him to say that brings more attention to our team or others around him. He does everything right. So we're going to pay him because
he sat there and legitimized a comment that could have really irritated Stan Kroenke.
No, so
be real, $57 million to Stan Kroenke, who one day saw a $2 billion stadium turn to $4 billion and didn't sneeze.
Let me give you this perspective. How old is Todd Gurley?
24.
How many years he been in the league?
4.
Yeah,
I believe.
No, not
three.
Even 4.
This is going into four.
Yes. I don't think he had the ability, honestly, to really understand what his silence would be saying.
No question.
I believe the more experienced he would be, more time he's been in those situations, he'll learn from this situation. I think next time he gets an opportunity to set the record straight, if he wants to set the record straight,
or pass,
he'll be more aggressive.
Yeah, I think that's it. Pass on that interview, yeah, Bob. Exactly. Yeah.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, joined now by NBA champion Donte Jones, longtime NBA player Coutinho Mobley. Time for a big story, sponsored by Papa John's. 2 medium, 1 topping pizzas, just $6 each. Let's move to the Lakers, who had an eventful Thursday, to say the least. First, the Pelicans didn't even dignify LA's trade offer for Anthony Davis with a response. Then LeVar Ball came on Speak for Yourself and other FS1 shows and called out everyone from LeBron to Luke Walton to Magic Johnson to my weight. But they found a way to bounce back last night, mounting an unlikely 18-point comeback win over the Celtics in Boston, capped off with a buzzer beater by Rajon Rondo. Now, reportedly, Magic Johnson is flying to Philadelphia to talk with the team. Question here is, did last night's victory prove the Lakers are going to survive all this latest drama? And I say no. I thought last night was more about the Boston Celtics and the problems they have there, and Kyrie Irving having a bad night. I think that game said to me a lot more about the Celtics than the Lakers.
I'm going to say yes. It was more proof of the Lakers when they play at an optimal level, when they live up to their potential. That is a team that can make a serious run.
22 threes.
Say it again?
22 threes they hit last night.
Golden State beat them at home with LeBron before injury, and they were the fourth seed by 20. Yeah. That team. It's the same team that's
hit 22 threes.
Okay, but that it's a different formula every different time, but it's still LeBron James's team that now has brought the shoulders down, the relief, the gorillas off your back. We are staying in L.A. We heard Lonzo playing Puff Daddy. You know, we ain't going nowhere. It's real. These guys are a young core that is starting to say,
everything
we're here together. We're glue. Let's go out there and go get it.
Everything is psychological, you know. So, we all witnessed this where, you know, there's situations, whether it's going from one network to another or, you know, going from one team to another team, especially when you're young. Psychologically, it does a lot to you, right? It does a lot to you as an individual. So this right here for the Lakers, the younger guys and the Lakers, the trade is over now. Now I can play a little more free. I know I'm not going nowhere right now, right? And you got to think about it. The millenniums are like this just in the world alone. they forget fast. So it's like, okay, I was worried. All right, well, mom and dad ain't gonna do nothing. You know, I came in late. They ain't gonna say nothing. Okay, cool, I lasted. They lasted right now. So now you seem more of a more confident, woo, we got that off our back kind of thing. That's what I think.
What about when the kids come in and they go, ah, mom and dad have relaxed, but they still giving me up for adoption as soon as they can?
It's always multiple ways you can look at it. And yes, that's one of them.
Pack them bags.
But
stay packed. Pack them bags. You ain't got to pack them. Just stay packed.
Keep them by the door. Keep them by the door.
But Luke did a good job last night of relying on his vets and putting the pressure on his vets and let them ride the wave until the end of the season. I think they have shooting coming and they have some guys with experience coming. So It's gonna be a situation where if they have their vets, they don't have to show off their young core like they did to make it attractive in a trade package. So now you can rely on your vets, and your vets have playoff experience. You have another champion on your bench. Mm. You have people that can put together performances from experience, from a confidence perspective. And if they get rolling on this stint of games they have coming up against some really tough teams, it puts a lot of pressure on people in the playoffs going forward.
Which I think they will.
And Dante, I'm shocked by your take. And why? I'm going to just tell you why. Mm. Because we've talked, and I can't believe you're not going to take this opportunity. Boston is in shambles. They have an organization of young players.
But you still have to play in Boston. And Boston is still a tough atmosphere. Yeah. They still have some tough competitors over on that team. Yes, they are in shambles. You're absolutely correct. I think it was a great game by the Lakers, and Boston is in shambles as well. I can't take that away from
you. Well, you got to think about it, too. Like, what you're saying, Jace, you're right on. But again, too, you have to give the Lakers credit. Now, at the end of the game, with Boston game, who's their best defender? Marcus Smart. He's not in the game. Was he six fouls? Did he have six fouls? Right? My point I'm trying to make is he's not in the game. Gordon Hayward's in the game. There's guys in the game that's
in shambles.
But you still have to give the Lakers some type of credit.
We're focusing on the Lakers young players. What about your point that the Boston young players that went to the conference finals and are being, they're on the trade block too.
But Kyrie did make a great comment last night. He said, listen, you saw all the length on the court at that point in time in the game. Like, I didn't have any pathways to the basket. That's a testament to what they have over there and they can use. Mm-hmm. They had a great performance from the Lakers. Boston, is now they're in a mind trick right now, because those young kids are looking like, oh, now we have an expiration date. It just flips back to Boston. We have an expiration date at this point in time.
They're thinking that.
And I carried you to the conference finals and you may trade
me. The demise of Boston. That was an old narrative. Look at Boston. They won 10 of the last 11.
Yeah, exactly.
And the only loss was a 4-point loss to Golden State. This team was rolling.
They were definitely rolling.
They were rolling. And then the Lakers went in there and said, despite what's going on, they're on notice. Think about it. We all are this way. You could be in one form, one flow, and then someone puts you on notice. We about to trade your butt. Oh, we're not? But that notice has been internalized. So now you're not feeling awkward. People think it's going to be awkward playing with LeBron now. It's just like playing with Kobe. You can't do nothing to the King. You can't do nothing to Mamba. So it's not awkward. You got to suppress that.
They on notice for real,
To me, the trade deadline, to me, will have more of a significant impact. Look, the Lakers, to me, aren't a serious team. Boston should be a title contender. And I don't think they're going to compete for a title, because I think they're as shook by the trade deadline and their impending getting dusted and moved out of town by Danny Ainge and an organization. Again, if I'm in that locker room, and I know they have moved Gordon Hayward to the bench and all that, but why is he getting minutes? And particularly in crunch time, he hasn't earned that.
The last 50-something seconds, Gordon Hayward's in before, Marcus Smart is in. You don't get that rebound, Morris. Like that, Marcus Smart is in, it's a different game to me.
They had 10 days of a situation where the Lakers' young core was on notice and they might be on a trading block. Right. Boston got the rest of the season. They got the playoffs to think about this, have that mental struggle on their back. And they know two of them might be in the package. Like Marcus Smart might be, but they know Jason Tatum is the centerpiece of that trade. And how do you think he feels right now?
Well, who cares?
You have to care because he's young. And his performance is based on his mental stability.
That's what happened to the Lakers in Indiana. We all are like this, and like I say, it goes back to psychology. We all are like this, just as kids. Your biggest adversity for the Lakers guys was that the past week, playing against Indiana. They picked you. So when they pick you, now they want to trade you inside for the past 2-3 weeks, maybe a month. You feel insecure.
But wait a second. I'm saying who cares, because the results, Boston's fourth in the East, despite a slow start, and Kyrie Irving certainly had a slow start by his standards. They're top 10 in both offensive and defensive rating, top 5 defense rating. The team has figured a way to get this going and getting it going well. They beat Toronto. They beat OKC. This is recently.
But based on talent, they should, to me, have the best record in the NBA.
I get it.
You went to the conference finals, and you got two of your best players
back. But
the
East is much stronger this year, and every year we see it.
And you got Kyrie Irving, center PC. One, you got Gordon Hayward, who's a problem. Then you got Kyrie Irving, who's supposed to be the face of your team, and he's having open conversations, basically, about he may get the hell up out of there.
It is still the first year, because Miami, when LeBron went to Miami with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, everybody thought they should have won the championship the first year. That's not how it works. When Portland was stacked with Rasheed Wallace and Jermaine O'Neal and everybody else and Steve Smith and Scottie Pippen, you should have won it. You were a tip or a rebound away from going to where you're supposed to go. But it's not so much as like, oh, because you have Kyrie back and you have Hayward back, you guys should be. That's not how it works.
Right.
They need another year.
Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including many of the world's most popular self-improvement shows, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and even how to feel balanced while meditating, even if you're also obsessing over when the cat was last fed. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can even download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all that newfound balance into your life. So get the year off right and start listening to podcasts on Spotify.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, Ketino Mobley and Dante Jones are back. Let's move to New Orleans, where the trade deadline passed yesterday without Anthony Davis being shipped out of town. Davis has made it clear he wants to be traded to a contender, so it's likely he'll move on in the offseason, but the Pelicans have decided to let their most valuable asset play anyway, with GM Dell Demps releasing a statement yesterday saying, quote, ultimately, Anthony made it clear to us that he wants to play and he gives our team the best opportunity to win games. Moreover, the Pelicans want to preserve the integrity of the game and align our organization with NBA policies. We believe Anthony Plain upholds the values that are in the best interest of the NBA and its fans. The Pelicans, to me, here are protecting the NBA's interest more than their own interest. And I think it's probably the right thing to do, because I think when it comes to this offseason, the league is going to, regardless of what happens to Anthony Davis health-wise, they're going to make sure they get the right amount of value in a trade.
Yeah, they're doing the right thing by putting him out there. Look, this whole wrist injury, let's not hype this up too much. I think it's getting exaggerated. Oh, don't put him out there as a potential trade chit, and then he gets hurt.
Boogie. Oh. Hey, this is a team to Boogie? Boogie was on their team.
Porzingis, anybody? What a major injury just got traded, and they got assets for Porzingis. So you still will get what you need out of Anthony Davis, injured or not. So I'm not going there. And I ain't buy the whole integrity of the league argument. I bought what they really wanted to say is, we got a top five player here. He's box office. We're going to milk these fans as much as we can. We're going to get all the milk out this car and add some water to call it milk after it. That's what you do. Oh. So they can't come out there and say, oh, we're protecting the league. They're just trying to get all they can out of box office.
Okay, listen.
Uh-oh. Here
we go. They did the best thing for the NBA as a brand, because we can't have the stars on winning teams sitting out on games where the team can get a win without them because of the guys who bought tickets and fans that came to see LeBron James for that one game he sits out. But for the New Orleans Pelicans, the biggest asset you had probably last 10 years could walk away in free agency if something minor happens to him, something small, an injury happens to him that keeps him out of next year. Why would Boston trade for a player that can't play, i.e. John Wall, i.e. DeMarcus Cousins? God forbid, I hope that he is healthy for the rest of his career. But if something happens to him over these losing stretch of games, you let your biggest asset walk away in free agency, because nobody's trading for a guy who's hurt who has to sit out.
It just happened.
Well, I mean, Porzingis.
He's not playing today.
Right, but that's the only.
He's not playing this year.
He's not going to play this year because they're not trying to win this year. They want their pick, and he can play. He's going to play next year. And
well, wherever he goes,
they're going to look at it. Why would I trade? Why would I give up assets for something that I could just buy in free agency for pennies on the dollar, like DeMarcus Cousins?
No, well, I think you should, and you both make really good points.
Thank you.
But I think you should play him. And listen, the NBA is a brand, and you will lose faith in a lot of your fans.
True.
If you sit him and they know that man is still healthy at the moment. Forget what's going to happen, but these next 27 games, 28 games, however many games it is that's coming up to finish out the season, you can't dog it. I wouldn't want to dog it. He wouldn't want to dog it, no. Right? So at
if
the
you're
end...
running the Pelicans, though, isn't it in your best interest to sit him?
No. I mean, sitting him does what?
That protects him.
Protects you for
because
what?
Because you're going
to,
what?
Listen, you're going to get hurt or not. Listen.
You're trading him, right?
You don't know the future.
Are you trading him?
You have no choice.
Are you going to
you
trade him?
You have no choice
so
to.
So if you're going to trade him, are you going to trade him healthy or possibly hurt?
Which I think he's going to be healthy. I'm not wishing on that.
I hope he's going to be healthy. But
what if you pull a John Wall?
Positives and negatives.
What if you pull a John Wall?
You get hurt at
home. He's sitting around. He get hurt at home. What if you can't read the future like that.
I understand, but you can stop it. If it happens at home, I can't do
you
nothing about that. But
stop
if it happens on
it.
A court,
it's still the same reality.
I'm going to look at it like the same reality.
And we've seen a reality where you trade. So all
but you have to do it if you're in New Orleans. I agree with them.
John Wall got hurt. Monty Ellis got hurt not playing basketball. People get hurt. So you sitting back and trying to preserve it as much as you can just so you can get some value from it. Let him play.
I don't want to offend any viewers or anything, but it's like he's an asset. And it's like, and so I want to say this delicately. Let's say you got a spouse.
Okay.
You want your spouse in the club every night?
No.
Because you want to protect that asset. So,
what? That's a great analogy.
That's not a great analogy. But how about this? Y'all act like the club is making you do something. You doing something in the club.
It puts you
what's
in
going to happen is
they live in Brazil. Brazil ain't did nothing to nobody.
What's going to
if
happen
you ain't
is
ready
going
to for it, you ain't going to make it.
Listen, if your spouse go to the club more than once or twice, then listen,
that's what
you got to choose.
That's what we're saying here.
Your spouse is telling you, I don't want to be with you, so you might as well get rid of him anyway.
So you pay your half said to go to the club. I mean, this whole analogy is off. Like, you ain't paying nobody to go to the club.
Listen, you don't want your spouse to go, but
you get a max contract to go to the club, girl.
I don't want my spouse to go, but if she keep going, that means she don't feel like being around me. You got to go. We got to make a decision. Right? Go ahead. You keep going.
What's the signing bonus at the club?
You keep going. This door going to be locked. I'm changing telling, locks.
I'm just saying, if I was to ask the question, baby, you want me to go to the club tonight? I'm going to be like, no. Stay home with me. We watch
it. And you know what's funny? You can still go to Office Depot, but not go.
I get it. The club is more dangerous. The club is more
way
dangerous,
more dangerous.
And being on the court is more dangerous than tearing your Achilles at home.
I don't know. Whole Foods in there. Yeah. You pick them up.
Many a divorce has occurred from a Whole Foods.
She starts seeing that sushi at 12 o'clock. We might be in trouble.
Yeah, right.
I just can't.
You want to keep him out of as much fire as possible.
But
New Orleans has to play him. They have to. They have to abide by the rules. They have to take care of their fans. They have to do what's right by him if he wants to play. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, I just hope that he stays healthy. Because
where does it stop?
Because I can't get as much as I can. You might still be able to trade him, but you won't get his full
value. You said that the other day. Where does it stop? Yeah. If you got players being...
No, I agree. That's why he's doing the best thing for the league.
Right.
You had Kawhi Leonard sit out last year.
Yeah.
And
Where does it stop?
But again, New Orleans is taking a bullet for the NBA because if he did sit out, trust me, there would be countless stories written about, here's another superstar, top five player sitting out. And I think New Orleans would prefer to sit this man, but they're doing the right thing for the NBA. But I do think the NBA is going to have their back. They're going to make sure they get great value when they do trade in.
Don't lose sight of what your goal is and what you're there for. Your purpose is to run a business. And this is good for business, having Anthony on the damn court. Like, let's not get – there's a lot of elements going around, a lot of balls to juggle, but the most important is let's run our
business. You're saying as an organization, listen, it's not even personal.
Yeah.
We're going to make you feel amazing for these next 28 games, and whoever else comes, hopefully he'll speak well about us.
Yes.
Marcellus,
and then the karma is there.
You like cars, and you have a buyer for your car, and you sell it in 3 weeks, and you're getting top dollar for your car, you're getting over for your car. You gonna go and drive it a couple more times, or you gonna hold that thing out till you gotta sell it.
Is our agreement binding on the odometer?
I'm gonna get a few more. You know, they want a certain amount of miles on it. They want fresh tires.
Whitlock and Wiley, Coutinho, Mobley, and Dante Jones are back. Let's move to LeBron James. Sponsored by Toyota. Let's go places. LeBron probably won't be going back to the finals for the ninth straight year, leading a Lakers team that was in disarray even before they missed out on Anthony Davis yesterday. A couple years ago, LeBron said explicitly he was chasing the ghost of Michael Jordan. But before yesterday's game in Boston, he sounded a very different tune.
There's nothing I need to get in this league that I don't already have. So everything else, you know, for me is just like just icing on the cake. You know, I love, you know, the process of everything that I go through to be able to compete every single night, put teams in position to compete for championships. But there's nothing that I'm chasing or that I feel like I need to end my career.
That's a hell of a concession speech. That was like election night and you roll out the white flag and, you know what, I really didn't want this job anyway.
Right.
I didn't want Anthony Davis. I didn't want to compete this year. I'm satisfied. And so, look, I think it's the proper thing for LeBron to tell himself so that he can get through these last 30 regular season games and get swept in the postseason by Golden State. He can get through the 4 playoff games. That's the right thing to say to yourself. You know, do I believe it? No.
Right. Even if he's right, it's just not good coming from LeBron James hearing that. That doesn't land well with me, especially when there's speculation that he came to L.A. for the wrong reasons, not necessarily on the court championship aspirations, but other things and endeavors. Look. Let's just break this down to the most basic element of sport and competition. Every time you go on that court, every time you go on that field, it is not a perfect product. No player ever in his best game did everything the right way because there's film session. And even in your best games, coach is sitting there with that red dot on you like, you know that cut right there. You know right there, that was your gap, you know, et cetera. And at least LeBron, I would hope, could just suggest that I'm still proving things in terms of my game. Like, maybe it's not in terms of accolade, because he's right. He's checked every single box. He has the acronyms. He has the letterhead that says, I am a doctor. Call me doctor forever, even if I don't have a damn patient. I am Dr. LeBron James of basketball. But still, that doesn't land well when you have a lot of things circling around you and your team is not doing well.
Just say it. He's lying. He is lying.
Okay.
The man that I know is lying right now. That's my guy. And he is a great dude, but he lied to y'all the other day. Mm. Okay? Because he's still trying to get another ring. Yep. He's still trying to get another MVP. He's still trying to dominate on a daily basis because he is he's ultra competitive. Like, he is competitive to another level. Like, he wants to win at everything. He still wants to show his dominance and show that he can do it at a later age. He still wants to be the greatest in the game.
Like,
he's here.
Explain it.
Because that's why he's playing.
That comment was more of like a seatbelt. Keep him safe. That's what that comment, even though we know him. Listen, you come to L.A., you didn't come to L.A. just to chill. You come to L.A. to try to win.
Right.
So to say what you're saying, maybe in your brain, because I'm 34, my hunger right now, and I know it's going to take me at least 2 years to get back to the finals, maybe because I need some more help. You saying that right there, listen, I don't believe you, but who am I, right? You don't believe him.
But still, he's still going to be number one in points, top three in rebounds.
What's the motivation?
The motivation is he's irate. he is irate. Mm. He wanted Anthony Davis. He wanted something at the trade deadline more than Mike Muscala or whatever it is they got. Mm. He wanted to compete this year. LeBron James every year is about one destination, the NBA Finals, and a chance to add to my legacy. He's irate. Mm. And so when you get irate and you don't want to do something, you don't want to cuss nobody out, you don't want to fan the flames anymore, you do start lying to yourself. You know what? It's like this morning, and every morning, basically of 2019, I took a resolution about addressing weight and everything. Every morning, I make a smoothie of spinach, kale, and fruit and stuff.
Okay.
And I tell my man, this tastes like ice cream. It's like ice, and that's what I tell. Yeah. I've convinced myself that this is ice cream.
Irate, irrational. You got to go to other places.
It takes
fake it till you make it.
He is upset, but at the end of the day, he's still going to get. He's going to be in L.A. He's going to get a star. He may get two stars. It's just not right now.
Just to say that he has nothing left to get, like, to be number one in points, like, that is a big feat in the NBA. That. To be top 2-3 rebounds, that's a big feat.
We're not dancing around this, but let's be real. LeBron's too sophisticated to even let this one slip. Like, for him to lie, that's one thing. But with the motivation to lie, to me, is a little disturbing because LeBron is so careful with his brand, so careful with the product he puts out there. Why would you put this out there where someone can misinterpret it or take it on his face?
Yeah, it shows you that everything's not planned over there because
something's gone wrong.
People make mistakes all the time, so I give him that pass. I give him a pass on that.
Listen, I'm going to say this, and I've said it before, and you guys have all performed at the highest level. I think the best friend of an athlete or any performer is delusion. Mm-hmm. Just think it through. Delusion.
Yeah.
And again, it's like, to me, if I wasn't delusional, I would almost not have ever accomplished anything in my life.
You have to have a short-term memory, too.
Delusion, some people actually, like, set goals and actually achieve them, and and delusion is actually good for life. Like, having
some
people hit it. No, I'm agreeing with you. Some people hit those things.
You trick yourself.
They trick themselves and hit those goals.
Make something else.
And make another set of delusional goals and hit those too. Yeah, like, exactly. They make things work.
You know how you wish for something so much, and it doesn't, like, I love the Patriots and, whatever. But so you wish for it, so I don't watch it. And if I don't watch it right away, they'll start winning. I'm like that. You know what I'm saying? Does it make sense? Like, so I can say this, LeBron says what he says. Exactly. It's like a superstition.
This will sound like a joke, and feel free to laugh. I promise you, I look in the mirror, and I see somebody better looking than Denzel Washington. And when I step into the club or when I step, I'm going to step out with my girl tonight to dinner.
All right.
I got her convinced I'm better looking than Denzel Washington.
We all had
you
that.
Gotta get a point again. You got to get a point again.
Get a point, right.
You catch me at the right angle. Hey, but
you might be delusional if you believe her.
Hey, that's part of the delusion, Marcel. That's part of the delusion.
I ain't got her either.
That's part of the delusion.
Hold on, we can't go past this. We had a moment in time, y'all. Everybody bow your heads. Dante Jones finally said something bad about LeBron.
It's a historic day.
He said something about LeBron. I went by LeBron. Now you got a real friend in Dante.
He lied.
I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. Time to put on our thinking caps. Greg Jennings from Western Michigan, am I correct? Michigan University, not Central Michigan. Steve Berline from Notre Dame are here.
We need to get our thinking cap.
as you all know, you're not as smart as us. I'm a journalist. We've got our resident Ivy Leaguer over here, Marcellus Wiley. So we're going to take a deeper look at some big issues in the world of sports. No. Got a special cap for Marcellus. Darnell, bring in the cap for our overrated Ivy. We still haven't seen his transcripts from Columbia.
Never will.
all right, let's move to Boston.
F D.
Where Bill Belichick and a handful of Patriots were at the Celtics-Lakers game last night. On Sunday, New England became the first team in over 50 years to win a Super Bowl after losing the previous season. And Belichick's ability to lead the team back after last year's controversial benching of Malcolm Butler is just more proof of his genius. Yesterday, Patriots insider Tom Curran drew an interesting parallel to the former Patriot coach, writing, quote, "It's ironic that the man who preceded Belichick, Pete Carroll, went about things very differently in Seattle after Super Bowl 49. Everybody got to add their two cents on what the decision to throw instead of run cost them personally. The sniping and bitterness never went away because it was allowed to get traction. With the Patriots, it was Belichick the father taking the question why from the family and saying, 'cause I said so.'" This article blew me away today, and I think it's the final thing, because I was someone that thought Belichick would pay a price for that Super Bowl decision. And clearly I was wrong. And I think it's proof what Belichick did. I think Tom Curran's drawn the right parallel. To me, this whole player-friendly coach thing versus a coach who's a dictator and a leader, I would rather have the dictator and the leader than the player-friendly coach. Player-friendly coaches are overrated.
Oh, certainly not overrated. Underrated. More player-friendly coaches have won the Super Bowl than hard coaches, especially at recent times. You want to go, Belichick is one coach. He's won six times. But you want to go from 2000 all the way through. I could count nine easily player-friendly coaches that have won, including one Pete Carroll as well. You want to keep
Who's
going?
Who's 1-1? Go
okay,
ahead.
You want to go Mike Tomlin? Is he perfect?
Who's 1-1?
That's my point. Yeah, I keep giving you more names.
You
John Harbaugh?
This guy keeps winning.
Tony Dungy? Sean Payton? Anybody?
I don't know if I call Sean Payton.
I'm just telling you what my boys tell me.
I know the guys, Jimmy Johnson, that won multiple.
Now you're going, okay.
Vince Lombardi, who won multiple. Bill Parcells, who won multiple.
Respect.
I'm talking about the guys that do it over and over again. These one-offs that, you know, catch a few breaks and have a very talented team.
Yeah.
Coughlin, by the way.
Who?
Coughlin.
Tom Coughlin.
Yeah, respect. And I love the fact that you said that you prefer. But you know why I prefer a player-friendly coach? Because I need you to give me schematic genius. I need you to put me in proper position. I need you to provide. Hold on, I'm not done. I'm self-motivated, bro. And I mean, I'm not going to talk about you, but I don't need somebody barking at me to get something done. Because guess what? I can get it done without barking.
I don't know if he barks.
You don't know if Belichick barks?
No.
Have you talked to them players? Have you heard of the Hill? Do you understand what it is if you don't do what Belichick says? The ultimate is you're gone. But there are steps leading to the ultimate. And for me, the wins and losses, I remember hearing it this way. Players was like, you know what? There are too many teams out there that win that don't have all the hell to go through to win. And then there are other teams that have it nice, and guess what? They may not win. But there is enough evidence and enough coaches that have said, I could do it with emotional latitude. Think of Pete Carroll and what he was dealing with up in Seattle. The personalities. One player doesn't talk. One player talks too much. One player is just saying all the right things. Another player is trolling.
Marcellus, do they repeat?
One play away, you're right. They didn't, but they won. So the point is,
they just have to tear down overrated? Their whole Legion of Boom deal to rebuild it. They just have to tear that whole thing down.
But if we're going to base everything off of Belichick, nothing is of standard in the NFL. True. That's absurd to start there.
It starts with Belichick, but you know, I can give. It depends on what your interpretation of a player friend of coach is. I think I played for Jimmy Johnson. I got a ring. Great. He was very dictatorial, but if he liked you, he was very friendly. The players on his team, if you produced for him, if you won and did what he wanted you to do, he was a great coach to play for. He was very friendly. But if you crossed him, if you didn't do things the way that he wanted them done, if you didn't come through for him one time, bam, it's over.
Right.
Players knew that. We understood that. But we also loved playing for him. Now, Tom Coughlin, we mentioned him earlier. He was a complete dictator from start to finish. But another one we can talk about is Mike Shanahan. All right. Yeah. He would be considered a player's coach, right. I think.
Yep.
But Mike Shanahan was a guy that had no.
Ask Donovan McNabb.
Multiple.
I mean, well, ask Donovan McNabb.
Multiple championships.
Ask Donovan McNabb if he's a player friendly coach.
We can ask T.O. about Bill Parcells or Keyshawn. Like, I mean,
you can ask people about Pete Carroll, too, probably. You can ask people.
Don't do that.
The bottom line is that it depends on your situation. There's been coaches on both sides that they're going to win that are come through.
One's better than the other, though, Greg.
Yeah, I don't think that player coaches are overrated. I think, number one, there's more than one way to skin a cat. You're looking at who continues to repeat and win.
Thanks.
And Belichick has done a phenomenal job. That's like telling a parent who is more lenient and more strict, oh, no, you should be more strict or you should be more lenient. If it's proven to work, then make it work. Do what you do. And I think in this instance, both have worked. Both have been proven to get rings. Maybe one has proven to get more consecutive, and we're talking specifically Bill Belichick, because he understands the players that he wants to bring in that will abide by his rules and his terms.
I can't wait for one of these, because I'm going to Chuck Noll, I'm going to Tom. I can't wait for one of these player-friendly guys to build a dynasty. I really want to see that.
Well, I don't think that being dynastic is the same thing as are they overrated.
They're not on the same level as the dictators. Makes them overrated.
I would say that they are. And now, if you want to go aggregate, they certainly are, because there are more coaches that have won championships, more coaches player-friendly way than dictator.
I'm going to tell you why that is.
There's been more repeat.
I'm going to tell you why that is. Most people are scared to death of conflict. Scared to death of uncomfortable conversations.
I agree with that.
And so they all sit around and lie. And that's why you're always sitting around coaches. Coaches lied to me, told me this and told me. Because they don't want to tell you the truth, because they don't like conflict. And even some of these big, bad football coaches, they scared too. Bill Belichick ain't scared. Chuck Noll wasn't scared. Jimmy Johnson wasn't scared. Bill Parcells was. These guys that build dynasties ain't scared.
But benching Malcolm Butler, it sounds like a person who's avoiding conflict. Because guess what? You can't talk your way through that situation. Like he was saying,
Greg was done with Malcolm Butler.
Here's my thing that Greg was saying. As a parent, there are some parents who are more lenient, some parents who are more strict. And guess what? I guess all we're looking at is your kid going to turn out to be a good citizen in society? You know, that's going to be the result. The result is there are championships won by people who are saying, hey, let's talk through this. And there are championships won by people saying, I'm just going to cut you.
It's the same in the real world.
Yeah. I mean,
look at the CEOs in the world. There are some very successful CEOs that rule with an iron fist. There are some very successful CEOs that rule by letting people have that open, the Google kind of atmosphere, you know, or the Amazon, whatever you want to call it. But the bottom line is that to be successful, you got to know exactly what you want. You got to know exactly what you want your culture to be. And you got to be able to make those tough decisions and get rid of the riffraff and the people that don't buy in. If people don't buy in, that's where the problems start. And if a coach isn't strong enough to draw that line and say, hey, I'm not putting up with this crap, but we're going to make this an environment everybody wants to be a part of, it ain't going to work.
Yeah, I want to be careful, but Steve, I'm sure you're a parent as well.
I am.
Yeah, all three of you guys parents. I'm sure you've done research, homework, what works, what doesn't work. I don't want to go all off into it because I don't have all the facts in front of me right now, but there is a culture that's like really hard and militant on their kids, really. And everybody knows it, and the results are phenomenal. They've come into this country and had incredible results with their kids. And so I'm just sorry. I'm somebody that Belichick dictator culture produces, in general, better results than I'm going to be BFF with these players. I'm going to be BFF with my
okay,
kids.
You want some results? Let me reel this in. Belichick won it this year, right? Belichick. All right, this is dictator hand, and this is player friendly. Belichick, Peterson. Belichick, Kubiak. Belichick, Carroll. Harbaugh, Coughlin. McCarthy, Peyton, Tomlin. Like, I'm just saying, this is the last decade.
I get it. Only one guy shows up in there six times, though.
Yeah, right. Respect to him. And it's going to be a lot of one-offs for the other side.
Yeah,
it's going to be a lot of one-offs.
We can't argue that.
No.
We give you that. But both work. And you can't say one is better than the other just because he's the one who's won it over and over again.
And do we all think that Belichick would be as great as he is without number 12? Mm. Would he be there six times without number 12?
I'm not so sure. And I love them both. But I'm not so sure, man. I just... There's a reason. Why are we just you kidding me? Y'all don't think one is better than the other. Y'all kidding.
To Marcellus's point, where are the other coaches who are just as
dictatorial?
No,
I'm just saying. Where are they though?
He's not the only dictator.
Where's their success?
Where's the success outside of Belichick as a dictator?
You
done proved the point. Because there is multiple expressions of the player friendly coach being a champion. Only one dictator lately.
Tom Coughlin got two Super Bowls out of it.
Yep.
Okay.
That's two.
He snuck in as well.
You got two guys.
You got to go way. You got to go way. You got to drop way back after that.
Well, one guy's done it six times. I don't need any more than that. And I'm looking throughout the history of the NFL.
I'm looking at it right here.
The guys that get it done. Now, you can take that soft stuff to basketball and beg and plead and beg your players.
What
is
soft about talking through an experience?
It's soft.
No, it's not.
I'm not against it. There's a time and a place for it. But when you're 66 years old like Belichick and you're an adult, there's a time to talk to these kids like they're kids. And that's what he said. Because I said so, that's why we
And I hated that when my mama said that. You know
right.
what? I left she with no
right.
understanding.
She
so what?
Right.
So what? I won't do it again, but I don't understand why.
You
that's
don't
real good,
understand.
Mama. Real
you know,
good.
When you're going to understand when you're grown and your kids do the same damn thing to you, that's when you're going to be like, oh, this
fact.
Is my
you know what? You know what? Hold on. You know what's bad about that? You should know before your kids do it to you. If you ain't understanding, you ain't gotta wait for it to happen.
If she explained it to you at the time, you wouldn't understand. That's why your little badass got in trouble, and we had to spank you.
I'm mad again at my mama because you sound like her right now.
All right, welcome back, Whitlock and Wiley. Greg Jennings and Steve Berline are back. Let's move to Kyler Murray, who is on the list of players that will be in attendance at the NFL Draft Combine later this month. Murray's future has been a topic of fierce debate, with his size leading some to wonder if he'd be better off playing baseball. In the last 10 NFL drafts, Russell Wilson is the only quarterback under 6 feet to be drafted. Murray is listed at just 5'10", and even that appears to be generous. I don't like short quarterbacks, and I don't like quarterbacks that are too tall. Perfect height for a quarterback is between 6'3 and 6'5. Any taller than 6'5, you got a problem. Any shorter than 6'1, you're really flirting with danger. This kid's about 5'9. He's a baseball player.
Hopefully you'll listen to this because I'm going to bring up a Super Bowl champion coach who's a dictator. So you kind of like that, right?
Yeah.
John Gruden, I used to think quarterbacks had to be tall. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Just said it. A lot of them. Drew Brees twice a year in Tampa, Russell Wilson. But you know who tipped the scales for him? You know who made him change his mind? Hey, Kyler Murray. He said, I see this kid coming out of Oklahoma. I was like, all them prototypes I used to have, throw them out the window, hand size, height, arm. You played football. Please don't be the guy that walks into it and is like, where's the tape measure? Oh, that's his game.
Anybody else, I'm good.
Anybody else but quarterback? Look, I'm with anyone who's believing in what they see. And he's blurry on the field with a better arm. And the guy just, that baseball acumen, that baseball moxie, Russell Wilson, I'm with him.
I would say there's another under 6 foot that's been drafted recently and done well, Baker Mayfield. I don't think he's 6 feet tall, but to support your argument, I agree. I think that the size does matter. There are exceptions to the rule. Now, the question is whether Kyler Murray is going to be one of those exceptions. I've heard he's closer to 5'8 than he is to 5'10.
He looks it.
So, and I mean, whether a guy like that can succeed in the NFL, it has never happened. I mean, Flutie was taller than 5'8.
Yeah.
And Flutie never really proved himself as a starting quarterback.
Wait a minute. Pro Bowl Flutie, Flutie Flakes, don't do that to my teammate.
I'm with you.
Okay.
I'm with you.
All right, Pro Bowler.
It took him a long time to get that opportunity.
Yeah.
Kyler Murray, I have to see it to believe it. I can't believe a team would invest a high first-round pick on a guy his size. I love Kyler Murray. I know he's a baller. I know he can play. I love everything he brings to the table. I just think the big boys coming in there and trying.
For the record.
You guys can close the gap a lot quicker at this level than the Cannon call.
For the record.
That's what happened with Johnny Manziel.
Former quarterback, how tall are you?
I'm 6'2 and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, 6'2 and a half.
Right on the border for me.
Look, he's not too short. Yes, he's too short on the standards of what we look at in scale as a prototypical quarterback. But how often do we see this in sport? Muggsy Bowes in the NBA. Did it work? Absolutely, because he made it work. And there was something about him that stood out. When you look at Baker Mayfield, and you look at Kyler Murray, as long as he has some intangibles that trump his height and that make you forget about his height, which we have seen on the college level, and we haven't seen it on the pro level because we haven't been given that opportunity, he's going to be just fine.
And so let me ask you this. If an NFL team drafted Kyler Murray and he turned out to be the Muggsy Bogues of the NFL, think they'd be happy?
I don't think the league would be happy.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Rams running back Todd Gurley.
Oh my.
What is that? You Rick James? What? What is?
I look like Rick James, you? I look like Rick James, you? Let me tell you something. I walked in today, and they're going to start talking about, well, what costume you going to put on? You know what I told them, Marcellus? I told them, I said, I ain't wearing no costume. This is my clothes. I'm going like I want to go today. God damn it, the hell, anybody don't like it, you know what? Go see my agent. Made that.
She your agent, too? Keeping the money in the family.
Legal fees. Legal fees.
Were you performing somewhere tonight? What?
Yeah, please.
What the hell? I just think my clothes. What I got? I feel good today.
Shazam. No, you don't.
I'm living my best life. I ain't going back and...
Let's get to our highlight from our discussion earlier about Haters. Todd Gurley. You're not going to convince me that the value of running backs is declining when I just watched Carolina Panthers running back Christian McCaffrey carry Cam Newton for an entire season.
How did you wake up from that boring Super Bowl with this revelation? This is completely off. The meat of the argument is the running back position has been devalued for good reason. It's because if you look at it, what's easier to get? 4 yards going through 9 defenders or just throwing the short passes like New England, and that's why they continue to win?
Surely to God today, Uncle Jimmy, you're going to agree with me. Uncle Jimmy, what's your take on our debate about Todd Gurley?
What you do? Where you go? Who'd he bring up? Rocky Marciano.
Who?
Rocky Marciano. You didn't catch that, did you?
You
see how he just slid that right fashion? We talking about Todd Gurley. Coldest running back ever made. Got the good hair. Braided, curly, came straight out the mother womb like that. Straight from the motherland.
Braided, curly.
And so somehow or another, we done brought Christian McCaffrey up in this. Christian McCaffrey, especially according to the world of Jason Whitlock, is the Rocky Marciano of running backs. Always got to bring up McCaffrey. How far back did we go through this? didn't catch that, did you?
That got by me. You got by me on that one. I didn't catch that.
See, Jason's about as slick as snail snot if you don't watch it. You know what I'm saying? He real slick.
I like that.
And every time you look at him, he going to make a little racial. He going to throw a little racial curve on him.
Get him.
Real talk. He made a great point about the value of the black running back. But then he going to mess the whole thing up. What he throw in at the end? Jason McCaffrey.
Christian McCaffrey.
Christian, what'd he say? What'd he bring up? What'd he say? Always playing the race car.
How is that playing the race car? I'm not playing. You the one playing the race car.
The conversation was about Todd Gurley and how Sean McVay screwed it up. Yes or no?
Yes and
okay, you was making a great point. You were doing good. I'm like, damn, he learning something from me. And then what you throw in it then? Christian McCaffrey. And to vaguely suggest that he carried Cameron Newton, it's preposterous. It's blasphemous. It's dubious. It's It's hippopotamus.
Hippopotamus. Hippopotamus.
You know what the hell I mean, man. Look it up.
I'm not.
Look, look, you can't keep on defending him like this. You understand me? He's slick in every debate. He do this to you every time. Huh? See, you sit up here siding up with him.
Huh?
Look at, let me say something. He my nephew. Mm. You gotta play rough with his little stubby ass. Huh? Huh? Sit up and talking about Julie Edelman. Look, talking about Julie Edelman ought to be in the Hall of Fame. You know what you need to ask him?
What?
Does Cornbread Maxwell belong in the Hall of Fame? Remember the rubber band man?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm?
Mm-hmm.
Got two titles. You too young. You don't know nothing about that, do you?
MVP. Mm-hmm.
Cornbread carried Larry Bird to his first two NBA titles.
Mm-hmm.
Cornbread was the MVP.
I'm knowing.
Cornbread won what I just tell you, two titles.
Mm.
But you will not hear one person from Boston say that Cornbread Maxwell belong in the Hall of Fame. But Julian Edelman do? Cornbread Maxwell's jersey's retired in the Garden. Do they even sell Julian Edelman's jersey? Beside Target?
You know what? I gotta.
I'm sure they do.
Maxwell.
I'm sure they do.
That's the first good point you've ever
that
made.
That was a good point. I ain't never
you
heard that
curve, but I'm gonna think about that one on Cornbread Maxwell.
You'd be surprised what happened if you listen. Sometimes. Every now and then the sun will shine on a dog's ass right down here.
Is that the dance?
Let me give my approval rating for Todd Gurley. I'm going to go with an 18 job performance. I blame Sean McVay for everything. All-time greatest, I'm going to give him a 12.
Hey, right.
Character, a 24. The man's character is off the chart. The way he handled being benched in the AFC Championship, it's beautiful. Authenticity, a 22. Total of 76 All-Star.
You just read that. You don't believe none of that.
You can't, you can't blame
Sean McVay for Todd Gurley getting the ball and not running with spirit, not running through the holes decisively. Like, come on, man. It's low. I don't even want to read off the numbers because this is not who Todd Gurley is. This is just who he was last seen. Scout team.
You done made history again. This is the first time you've been lower than me.
Yeah.
Dante criticized LeBron.
Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolution. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including Oprah's Super Soul Conversations, The Tim Ferriss Show, Happier with Gretchen Rubin, and The Nutrition Diva, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and how to feel balanced while meditating, even if you're still wondering if the cat's been fed. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can even download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get that all newfound balance into your life. So start the year off right with podcasts on Spotify.